All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant. December 27th, we're going to get into two basic things, two basic topics. We could go for a lot more, a lot of things going on with sports. We could talk about my horrible NFL picks. We'll save you from that. We could revisit some of the under over, see where we stand. We could talk about other topics with the Giants, but we're not. We're going to talk about two quarterback situations, one with the New York Football Giants, one with the Denver Broncos, and then also a topic which I've been previewing for two podcasts, and that's my full Hall of Fame ballot for Major League Baseball. I'm real excited to go through that and break down who I think is in, who I think is out, give you some stats, some figures to support all those things. But let's first start off with the New York Giants. With the Giants, they announced today that Tyrod Taylor is going to go back to the starting role in quarterback. That means our hero, our idol from North Jersey, Tommy DeVito, is going to be riding the bench, carrying that clipboard as the number two quarterback for the Giants. Listen, Daboll's only job is to win football games. In putting in DeVito, when they gave him the nod after Taylor got injured initially, when Jones was already out, I thought that they would lose games. I thought they would lose out. I thought this would put him in the best position possible to get that draft pick, to find Daniel Jones's replacement, because, you know, outside of last year, it's kind of been clear that he's not going to be the guy moving forward. Listen, Taylor got in that game against the Eagles in the second half. There's a little spark. He was able to throw the ball downfield. He had that long touchdown to Darius Slayton. And it's not like DeVito was turning the ball over and giving the ball up with fumbles, with interceptions. It, you know, he didn't do that, but what he did was he held the ball and took a lot of sacks. And sometimes taking a sack is not a bad play, but when you take all these sacks and instead of it being second and six, second and seven, because you just take a short completion, when you got second and 17, it's really hard to move the ball down the field and sustain any type of drives. So you go to Taylor, who's a guy who at least you feel a little more comfortable that he's willing to take shots down the field, like you saw with the deep ball to Darius Slayton. Honestly, it's just with DeVito, he was just playing a little too conservative, where you can do that if you've got the 2000 Ravens or the 2002 Buccaneers and your goal is just not lose the game, or the 85 Bears. But the Giants needed to generate some type of offense. And I understand the points that they scored the other day. I mean, one of those drives, they got the ball on the 8, and the other one was a defensive touchdown. So it's not like Taylor totally moved the ball down the field, but overall Taylor is the better quarterback. And if you're Brian Daboll, like I mentioned earlier, your job is to win games and help continue building a strong culture. I understand that the season did not go the way that this football team and the fans and the organization wanted it to go, because at best, they're going to finish 7-10. Most likely, they're going to finish 5-12, which just is horrible. It's abysmal. But your job, if you're Daboll, because you're not going to get the top one or two pick, is to win as many football games as possible. Because should you struggle a little bit next year, you can say, all right, wasn't a good year, but he won 7 games. They could have beaten, if they win these two games, they could have beaten the Rams. They could have beaten the Eagles. And that's your job if you're Daboll going forward. And this team is a bad team. Let's not make any mistake about it. Outside of Saquon Barkley, Kayvon Thibodeau, and Dexter Lawrence, there's not a whole heck of a lot of talent on the ball club. And to go 7-10 with the roster going through second and third quarterbacks and your first string quarterback outside of one half against Arizona, not really being all that effective, a 7-10 record is kind of where you'd expect them to be given those scenarios. And like I said, if you can beat the Rams and maybe knock them out of the playoffs, if you can beat the Eagles, put them in a lower seed, you at least have some momentum, some juice heading into next year, a la the Detroit Lions knocking out the Green Bay Packers. And I understand Detroit finished 9-8 last year, but you're in a better spot, in my opinion, if you go 7-10 versus 5-12, and I understand you get the worst pick. But I think this is a team that's done so much losing Look at guys like Saquon Barkley and Sterling Shepard, who've been here for a while, and they've done nothing but lose. And I know Shepard was on that 2016 boat team who lost to the Packers in the first round. But for the most part, these guys at most have been to the playoffs once as members of the Giants, guys like Jones and Barkley. So it's okay to win a couple more games, and you're going to be disappointed as a Giant fan. And you still don't know most likely who your franchise quarterback is. And you hope they take a look at a guy, even if it's in the second round, to hopefully replace Daniel Jones. So that's where we stand with the Giants and the quarterback controversy. If they would have left DeVito in, though, and there was no announcement with putting in Taylor, I wouldn't have screamed. I wouldn't have kicked. I wouldn't have gone crazy. I would have said, all right, try to develop the kid. Maybe he comes back and is the backup for Jones, or maybe is the third string guy behind whoever you draft, possibly, like I said, in the second round. Because, they're probably going to draft another offensive lineman. And this team's offensive line, since they won Super Bowl 46, has been nothing but turmoil, nothing but chaos. But they've invested pretty heavily. They've made draft picks. Talk about Evan Neal. You talk about Andrew Thomas. You talk about Ereck Flowers. They signed Nate Solder away from the Patriots. This is not like they haven't invested in the offensive line. Willie Hernandez, Justin Pugh, who's, of course, back with the team since the middle of this year in that Buffalo game. They've invested high first, second round picks, and it just hasn't come to fruition. All right. The Broncos situation. You heard today Jarrett Stidham is going to go in there to replace Russell Wilson. With Russell Wilson, you can look at the 26 touchdowns and say you're impressed. You can look at that 5-game win streak that they were on earlier in the year. But honestly, go peel into some of those advanced numbers, something like intended air yards per attempt, and they're down nearly 3 yards from his 3 yards per attempt from what his max was with Seattle, from 9.9 now down to 7.1. This is a team that's lost 2 games in a row, all right? Stidham last year, for while he was on the Las Vegas Raiders playing against the San Francisco 49ers, yeah, the same San Francisco 49ers that a few days ago everyone thought was the best team in the league. They were in the NFC Championship game last year, obviously, and really the only reason they lost was because they didn't have a quarterback to play. So that same dominant defense, he put up 365 and 3 touchdowns in an overtime game. So it wasn't like it was garbage time. The entire game was throw the ball, throw the ball, throw the ball, make plays as needed. He had over 10 yards per attempt as well. And Sean Payton, they paid him decent money. They gave him $5 million a year for a guy who hadn't played a lot. That's a lot for a backup. Or I should say a backup who hasn't, shown you all that much. It's not like it's Marcus Mariota, who's won a playoff game and he's your backup like the Eagles have. Or Tyrod Taylor, who's took a team to the playoffs. So, kind of an unproven backup. That's a lot to give an unproven backup who didn't play. And I think at some point this year, Sean Payton thought he'd move off of Russell Wilson if it wasn't working out. You combine the fact that they've lost 2 in a row, they only have a 6% chance of making the playoffs per, it was either Yahoo or New York Times. I saw it somewhere. But the real reason behind this is that if Russell Wilson gets injured, the Broncos owe him about $36 million guaranteed. They're going to try to get out of this contract with as little dead cap as possible. Because, like I said, if he didn't pass a physical because he was injured, that money becomes guaranteed. So it's going to be a lot. I think it's like $35 million dead cap next year, $46 million the year after that. So you have to figure Payton's in this for the long term. But if Stidham shows that he can be the team's quarterback, then it's not a big deal to have that dead cap plus what you're paying Stidham because it's still right around market value for that quarterback. So the key here is Stidham showing out like he did against the 49ers last year when he was a member of the Las Vegas Raiders. And as crazy as it sounds, though, with Denver, they actually can still win the AFC West. They need to win out, and Kansas City needs to lose out. I don't see that happening if you're Kansas City, but they can also be eliminated from the playoffs with a number of different things happening this week. I mean, number one scenario would be the Bills, the Steelers, and the Chiefs all win. Then they go home. There's like four or five different scenarios there as well for them to get knocked out. All right, so there's the two quarterback stories. We'll take a little break. We'll come back on the other side, and we'll do the Baseball Hall of Fame for 2023, which those guys, of course, will be inducted in July of 24. So Schloss Rant, stay with us. We'll be back shortly to talk about the MLB Hall of Fame. All right, we are live here with a Schloss Rant. This is part two of Schloss Rant number 62. We told you we'd be back after the break. Now we're going to get into, again, what I've teased for a couple different episodes here, and that is the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. And I think the writers who actually get to vote on this, their ballot is due, I believe, on the 31st. So I'm going to give you the players that I am inducting, and then we'll also talk about some of the players that I am not inducting and why I just couldn't quite get there. All right, let's start off with the first player that I'm putting in. And this one's going to be controversial right away. Bobby Abreu. He was only at about 16% last year, so I understand the negative sentiment. He's polling at about 18.4% of the writers that have publicized their ballots, and this was current as of about a day ago. But again, some of these voters are absolute clowns, and they don't always watch all the games. Maybe they didn't cover these players particularly close because remember, these are the same guys that don't have Albert Bell in the Hall of Fame, that didn't even have Carlos Delgado last one ballot. And if you remember from the summer, one of my rants, I screamed about these two in particular, the fact that they're not in, and with Delgado, the fact he didn't even make it past one ballot despite his 929 slugging or OPS. And again, when you put in Scott Rolen last year, you totally changed what I consider the vibe, the aura, and the standards for the Hall of Fame. And even to a lesser extent, what that Veterans Committee did with Harold Baines. And you could say the Veterans Committee, they got it right with Fred McGriff earlier this year. But when the regular voters of the baseball writers who were primarily writing for newspapers 25 years ago put in Scott Rolen, then you know what? You give me the opportunity, as someone who's not officially voting for this, but as someone who has a platform, albeit a small platform here on Spotify with the podcast, to put in guys like Bobby Abreu. With that in mind, let me give you some key statistics about Bobby Abreu. He's one of only two players in Major League history, along with Barry Bonds, with at least 1,400 runs scored, 1,400 walks, 1,300 RBIs and 400 stolen bases. One of two guys. That's versatile. That means this guy could run the bases. He could take a walk. He had a keen eye. And we know how important taking walks are nowadays. And he drove in over 1,300 runs, which is nothing, not too shabby. And I understand that the Hall of Fame kind of discriminates against outfielders who don't hit for a lot of power. I understand the 288 home runs. I get it. But that type of versatility is unmatched. Another thing that puts him in some unmatched, players here. He's one of only eight players all time with at least eight seasons of 100 runs scored, eight seasons with 100 RBIs, and eight seasons with 100 walks. The other guys in there, pretty impressive names: Barry Bonds, Lou Gehrig, Mel Ott, Babe Ruth, yeah, the Bambino, Frank Thomas, Jim Thome, and Ted Williams. So I believe overall, this is a guy who had a .393 on base percentage. I think his batting average was around .290 something for his career. Again, the home runs weren't quite there with only 288 of them. But the versatility, the runs, plus the steals, plus the ability to take a pitch, something that we all know is very important nowadays, Bobby Abreu gets my vote. Next guy, Omar Vizquel. Listen. There is a lot of off-the-field issues with him right now. Okay. And I'm not taking that type of stuff into consideration. I understand the Hall of Fame voters, they're asked to, weigh character and all this other stuff. But Ty Cobb, that was not exactly a man of high character. We'll leave it at that. This is a guy with over 2,800 hits. And notice with Vizquel, you think defense, but the first thing I'm mentioning is offense. Over 2,800 hits. He's the only non-steroid, non-Pete Rose guy with that many hits to not be in the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame set a, the voters, they set a precedent. They put in guys who were glove first, like Luis Aparicio. Look him up to steal a, Mad Dog line there. Ozzie Smith. Go compare Vizquel to Smith. It's not even close. He's got double the home runs. Batting average is 10 points better. His on-base percentage is way better. So you've set the precedent. And again, a lot of my votes come down to precedents that have been set. And the precedent is that you're okay putting in a defense-first shortstop. I get the Bill James defensive metrics have him, like as an average defender. All right, but he still won 11 Gold Gloves. Still had over 2,800 hits. It's hard for me to keep him out. And again, I have to keep referencing Scott Rowland because that was a guy who I didn't think belonged anywhere near the Hall of Fame, and you put him in. I even read something today where one of the voters was saying something to the fact that when he first started voting, he really viewed it as more of a small room situation, but now he puts 10 people a year on his ballot. All right. So in that scenario, keeping it consistent with that, and yet again, keeping it consistent with the fact that you put Scott Rowland in voters, I'm putting in Omar Vizquel. That's number two. Next guy, Andrew Jones. This is another guy where his defensive acumen is going to be good enough to get him in there. But I'm going to start off mentioning the fact that he hit 430 over 430 home runs, which is not a slouch for a center fielder. He was at 58% last year, 65.3% so far this year, as of, I believe, last night, like I said. Among players with 10 or more Gold Glove awards, only Willie Mays, Ken Griffey Jr., and Mike Schmidt have more home runs. Those are some pretty darn good players. Two players at a premium defensive position with the center fielders, with Mays and Griffey Jr., and Mike Schmidt, a third baseman there, of course. From 98 to 2006, his last 9 years with the Braves, all of them above 24 home runs, all of them above 80 RBIs. Plus, you throw in a 51 home run year he had in 2005. The guy's in the Hall of Fame. If I had the vote. And again, he's trending towards it. He might not get in this year, but he's definitely trending towards that number. All right, the next guy. And I'll come right out and say it. He has a tinge of, tangential possible steroid Balco use due to a cream that he rubbed on his leg. But the year that he was accused or that he admitted it in front of a grand jury, he only had 25 home runs, and that's Gary Sheffield. All right, he claims he didn't knowingly take it. Again, there's guys in there right now, like Piazza, like Pudge Rodriguez, where there's been rumors. So it's tough for me to keep Sheffield out where, he admitted he took something. He didn't think it was steroids. It's tough for me to keep him out in this scenario. This is his last year on the ballot, his 10th year. He had about 55% last year. He's trending towards, he's looking like he's going to get it. It'll be quite a big jump, but he's at about 73.5% so far this year, again, as of yesterday. I think his biggest problem, though, is that he played for eight teams. That's a lot. Bruce Gotch has played for a lot of teams. He's in the Hall of Fame. Lee Smith played for a lot of teams. He's in the Hall of Fame. Those two guys, though, what they have in common is that they are relief pitchers. It's uncommon that guys who aren't relievers, who are going all over the place, bouncing from team to team. I mean, Lee Smith and Goose Gotcha both played for the Yankees. Sheffield also played for the Yankees. But again, these are just guys who played for a lot of teams. It happened that they played for the Yankees. I guess I'm just bringing it up to highlight the fact they've played for so many teams. When you think Lee Smith, you don't think about him as a New York Yankee. Goose Gossage, you definitely do think of him as a Yankee for sure. But Sheffield, again, the problem, he doesn't have one particular fan base or one group of voters from a city who were writing for these newspapers, and it was newspapers when he was playing, backing him. The longest tenure he had was 6 seasons with the Florida Marlins, and he won a World Series with them. So again, it's not like he did nothing for the Florida Marlins. He hit 320 during that postseason where he won the World Series. This is a guy who's pretty consistent throughout his career. And again, possible. Or, what he admitted to, not knowing taking it, but just for one season, and kind of had a falling out with Barry Bonds, who hooked him up with it anyway. But again, David Ortiz is in the Hall of Fame, rumors with Pudge, rumors with Mike Piazza. So again, 8 seasons for Sheffield with 30 or more home runs, 8 seasons with a 300 average or higher. He's won Silver Slugger awards at multiple positions. Yeah, he was a third baseman. Look it up if you didn't know that. Won a Silver Slugger award with the Brewers playing the hot corner in 1992. He won four of them as an outfielder. Let's be honest, though. He's not in there because he was a jerk to the media. He started, stuff everywhere it was, whether it was Milwaukee, San Diego, the Yankees, the Braves, the Dodgers. So he doesn't have that one fan base beating the drum for him, because there's not a whole lot of Florida and Miami Marlin fans. So I think that's what's working against him. But over 500 home runs for his career. I think he drove in over 1,600 runs in his career. It's his last year on the ballot. Writers, do the right thing. Put this guy in the Hall of Fame. And I'm not just saying that because he was a former New York Yankee and he had a top two finish in the MVP in 2004. Next guy, another former Yankee, Carlos Beltran. Another guy played for a million teams. And I understand you're going to bring up 2017 and me above anyone who screamed about the Astros for years and years and years, how they cheated the Yankees out of the World Series. But you got to remember, he was a player. It was the manager, AJ Hinch, I'm talking to you, his job to put the kibosh on it right away. The GM, I don't even remember his name because he had a baseball. His job to cancel all the cheating scandals because Beltran was still a player, 40 years old for the 2017 Astros. So if we can get by that, I think he's got a legitimate case. And again, played for a million teams, but he's got enough. You think of him really as an Astro, and he was barely even there. I think he's only been there for either 2 or 3 years. So yeah, I think really only 2 years. I think 04 and then in 17. So you think of him as an Astro because he dominated the 04 postseason with all those home runs. And of course, winning a World Series finally with the Astros, but he bounced around. I mean, Royals, Astros, Mets, Giants, Cardinals, Yankees, Rangers, bounced all over the place. But he's got 435 home runs in his career, one more than Andrew Jones, who we mentioned earlier. He had, to my count, and I could be off, but 12 seasons that I consider Hall of Fame type years, 25 homers, 85 RBI. So again, similar to what I mentioned with Andrew Jones. He's a career 307 postseason hitter. And I think that's kind of what puts him over the top for sure, doing it as a switch hitter. And that 307 number even includes 3 for 20 in that infamous 2017 postseason when he was 40 years old. Still had a 307 average with 20 at bats, counting against that as a 40-year-old. Of anyone with 300 or more steals, he stole them at over an 86% clip, the highest ever of anyone, like I said, with over 300 steals. It's not like a guy who's got two attempts and he swiped them all, whether it's a pitcher or something like that, or a guy with a cup of coffee in the major leagues. And he's only one of four players in the history with at least 1,500 runs scored, 2,700 hits, 400 home runs, and 300 steals, along with Barry Bonds, Willie Mays, and Alex Rodriguez. And for good measure, he's got the 25th most extra base hits of all time. So I think you combine the combination of speed, power, driving in runs, and being a really, really elite postseason performer with that 307 average. I think that's a guy that I'm putting in the Hall of Fame. All right, the next guys. There's three of them I'm kind of grouping together because I think that they're getting in no matter what. I don't have the numbers on Beltran on his percentages. It's, of course, his first year on the ballot. So anything would be unofficial based on what he's trending, but I believe he's trending somewhere in that 60 to 70% range. So I think he'll get in probably too eventually, even if it's not this year. But the next three guys we're going to kind of group together because I think they're getting in. Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, and Joe Mauer. Let's just get to Beltre real quick. 477 home runs, 3,000 hits. I'm voting him in. That's not even a question. Doing it at third base, which I believe is the position where there is the least number of Hall of Famers. So Adrian Beltre is in for me. We'll do Joe Mauer next, a little out of order here. Mauer is the first player ever in my mind who somehow I would consider a bust, but is also a Hall of Famer just based on the sheer fact that his last 5 years he was unable to really go behind the dish and catch. but he had such a dominant early tenure as a catcher doing it offensively. So again, I mean, he didn't live up to that big contract because he was over there playing first base and DHing and really didn't provide a whole heck of a lot of power, but he just did things as a catcher where he was dominant, and the numbers definitely back it up. I mean, he won three batting titles as a catcher. He did that in a 4-year stretch. He had 6 seasons with an over 400 on-base percentage as a catcher. You look at guys catching now, I mean, they're in there probably because they can run, you know, either they don't do very much as a hitter or they're a guy who can hit the ball out of the ballpark occasionally, but have like a 290 on-base percentage. It's a guy who 6 seasons, he was in there with a 400 on-base percentage as a catcher. Led the American League in on-base percentage twice, 2009 AL MVP, and he's the only catcher in history with at least 2,000 hits, a 300 batting average, and a 380 on-base percentage. So he did things that, again, as a catcher, will probably not be seen again. Be interesting when Buster Posey's on the ballot because I think his numbers are similar. Without, you know, totally knowing off the top of my head, and Buster Posey, you know, won 3 championships. Now or not much with the Twins. I mean, I don't even think he won a postseason game with the Twins. So I think he did things as a catcher where they're unbelievable. But again, a guy who I'm putting him in the Hall of Fame, and the voters definitely are putting him in too. But you kind of look at his career as a bust, which it's just insane. I guess a bust, the end versus the precedent he set in the beginning. All right, the next guy, Todd Helton. This guy's got a 953 OPS. So, you know, you think of Todd Helton and the Rockies. Larry Walker played a large part of his career with the Rockies. He's in the Hall of Fame. It's tough to, you know, weigh in that Coors Field high altitude scenario, but his numbers on the road are good too. This is a guy with a 287 average on the road, 386 on base percentage. His home numbers are just stupid, 345 average, 441 on base percentage. So, yeah, I'm calling him kind of a product of Coors Field, but when you average it all together, you got a guy with a 316 average, a 414 on base percentage. I understand the power is not quite all where you would want it to be, but let's not act like Coors Field is the only hitter-friendly ballpark since 1903. So he's trending at 85.7%, you know, now as of last night. Last year only at 72.2%, so almost in the Hall of Fame last year. And I think again, you have the 953 on base percentage, you're in the Hall of Fame in my book. For sure, even weighing in that Coors Field. Finally, A-Rod. Listen, I've mentioned this before. I've mentioned this over the summer. Precedents have been set. David Ortiz failed that 2003 survey testing. So did A-Rod. Name for me the union and MLB negotiated steroid drug test that Alex Rodriguez failed. He never did. I'm not here to say that he didn't use roids because he admitted to it, but the numbers are just too supreme to lead out. I don't even need to go into them. 680 plus home runs, you know, 2,000 runs knocked in, just a dominant player. You can't ignore some of these steroid guys. And I'm leaving Manny Ramirez out. And I'm leaving him out because of the fact that he did fail one of these union negotiated drug tests in 2011. A-Rod did not. I understand in 2013 he was found with, you know, Uri Scurry, his cousin, with the, you know, Biogenesis Labs. I get it. I do. But somehow he never failed an agreed upon drug test between Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association. And you might say, Schloss, you know, you're a Yankee fan, you're a big time Yankee guy, which I am. There's no denying that. But it's hard to keep these guys out. And I understand I didn't have a podcast. We weren't doing any of these, you know, videos and podcasts when Bonds was on the ballot, when Clemens was on the ballot. But the Hall of Fame is a museum. And I haven't been there in over 10 years, but the last time I checked, it's a museum. It's tough to tell the story of baseball without Alex Rodriguez. Put him in the Veterans Committee. I hope that they do the right thing. Put Clemens in. Put Bonds in. It's meant to tell the story. I've been okay with the Bob Costas solution to this and make a wing for these guys who have either admitted or accused of using steroids. Because again, the Hall of Fame is meant to be a museum, it's meant to show some of the greatest players. And A-Rod, without a doubt, is one of those greatest players. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. Steroids, we understand, but do the right thing. How do you know for sure, also? This is the other argument I make with steroids. How do you know for sure who was and wasn't doing it? And that's why I have no problem leaving off Manny Ramirez, because he did fail a negotiated test with the Players Union and Major League Baseball. But before that, you don't know exactly who was and who wasn't. So put A-Rod in, do the right thing. Now, some guys that I'm not putting in, I'm not big on relief pitchers. And I understand that Billy Wagner is trending very close. I think he's like at about 70% of the ballots that are out there right now. He was at 68.1% last year. He's in his ninth year on the ballot. He might get in. He probably will get in either this year or next. I was impressed with watching Billy Wagner, and he played for the Mets. So it's not like I never saw him growing up in New York. I'm just. For me, with relievers, it's Mariano and Hoffman, who was, a compiler, but still pretty darn good. Another guy who I believe he's in his first year on the ballot, who I'm not putting in. No, he's in his second. I'm sorry. It's Francisco Rodriguez, only 11% K-Rod, not putting him in. Chase Utley, I think, would be a guy who I'd do a little more digging. Because I know he was dominant at times. Same thing with his Phillies teammate, Jimmy Rollins. I mean, a guy that I don't understand that has 10.8% last year, and I think he's got more than that this year, is Mark Burley. Listen, I know he threw a perfect game, but this was an innings eater. I never once watched a Mark Burley start and said, I'm watching a Hall of Fame pitcher. No way. And the same goes for Andy Pettitte. So don't act like I have all this big Yankee bias. The same thing goes with Andy Pettitte. He was a clutch pitcher. He was a great pitcher. He was amazing in 96. I watched every big game that this guy ever pitched, including the ones with the Astros in that 05 World Series. I never thought to myself I was watching a Hall of Famer. I thought I was watching a really, really good player. And again, I'm not too worried about him taking PEDs once. That's not why I'm keeping him out. I just don't think his numbers, and I think he's got like a 3.8 career ERA. It's not a Hall of Famer for me. Sorry. So it's not, my Yankee bias, my pinstripe glasses can only go so far here. And then finally, another guy in his first year of eligibility, Bartolo Colon. Be interesting to see if he'll get on the ballot. David Wright's on the ballot too. Victor Martinez, Brandon, I mean, these guys, they have no shot. It'll be interesting. And I bring up these guys like this. It'll be interesting to see who's the one homer that covered this guy and, some of these guys, and they were nice to them from a writer standpoint throughout their career. Always like to see who the one random guy is that gets like a vote. And it's like, oh, they gave me a quote one time. I'll throw him a bone and give him a vote. Matt Holliday's another guy first year who, maybe stays on the ballot. Adrian Gonzalez, same thing, but I don't see it. So my ballot in summary here, we got Todd Helton, we got Andrew Jones, we got Gary Sheffield, we got Beltran. Yes, we have Alex Rodriguez. Yes, we have Omar Vizquel. We have Bobby Abreu. We have Beltre, and we have Mauer. So let's see. That's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. I believe that's nine guys that we have in. Yeah, nine guys that we have in. So Helton, Andrew Jones, Sheffield, Beltran, A-Rod is five, Vizquel is six, Abreu is seven, Beltre is eight, Mauer is nine. Those are my nine guys who I'm putting on my Hall of Fame ballot. All right. That is the end of the Schloss rant. Hope you enjoyed listening to my baseball Hall of Fame ballot. and the rest of the rant. We'll be back probably Saturday, get into some of these NFL picks and see where we stand with our predictions earlier in the year. Our record has not been all that great recently. Did go 2-2-1 last week, which isn't good, but an improvement that I'll actually feel comfortable to make picks. All right. Sauce Rant Live, Philadelphia suburbs. We'll see you later, everyone.